thou will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, just check out the link below in the description, or you can go to our official website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the link to become a Patreon donor in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to continue our discussion of our in-review shows. We do this every year at the beginning of each year, where we go back 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years, and we discuss the year in the past. So on this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, we are continuing our discussion of 1983, 40 years ago, and our guest, of course, is going to be Jerry Branham again. Jerry is one of our favorite guests on the show. He used to be a writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine and for Iron Man magazine, and Jerry's got a lot of experience in the sport, a lot of history in the sport, even more than I do. So Jerry's got always got a lot of great stories. So we're going to go back to 1983. We talked about 1983 on the last episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, but now we're going to talk about the pro shows that took place in 1983. So we're going to start our discussion with the 1983 IFBB Mr. Universe, which took place in Singapore that year. And Bob Paris had a really close battle with Barry DeMay. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the pro shows from that year. So we're going to start off with the Pro World Championships, which took place at the beginning of the year in February that Muhammad Makawe won. And that was also Lee Haney's first pro show. And then we'll go to the Night of the Champions for 1983, where Lee Haney won his first pro contest. And then there was a couple of Grand Prix shows that year that I want to talk about. The Portland Grand Prix that was won by Scott Wilson and the Denver Grand Prix that was won by Tony Pearson. And then, of course, we'll talk about the big Mr. Olympia contest that year that took place in Munich, Germany, and it was won by Samir Banut. And one of the best physiques, I think, ever to win the Mr. Olympia that year. So Jerry and I will talk about that. And then we'll talk about the Grand Prix shows that took place right after that contest where Muhammad Makawe won all of those shows. There was three of them. And then finally, we'll end our discussion where we'll talk about the Las Vegas Cup Grand Prix, which took place at the end of the year in December of 1983. And that was held along with the women's contest that was part of the movie Pumping Iron 2, The Women. So we got a lot to talk about with Jerry Branham today on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So I hope you guys will enjoy this episode. What else is going on out there in the world? I am finally over my jet lag from Hawaii, so I was finally able to get back to my workouts this week. Wow, 2 weeks off, man. I paid the price. My endurance was shot. My strength was down. I guess it doesn't get easier when you get older, right? But anyways, got through that first week, so hopefully next week will be better, and my strength will be back up a little bit, and just got to get back in the groove. I don't know how these people take months off at a time. I could never do that. 1 week is okay, but 2 weeks, man, I paid the price for sure. I was watching the playoffs while I'm recording this, and John Brown's son is playing for Detroit. Man, he is a great football player. So I think his other son plays for the Chicago Bears. Of course, I'm from Chicago, but I think the one who plays, his son who plays for Detroit is really like the superstar. He's doing awesome. And it looks like Detroit's going to win. I guess by the time you guys hear this podcast, you'll know the results, but they're playing good. All right. I got some emails that I want to read before we get to our interview with Jerry. If you guys have any comments you want to make about the show, just send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com and I will read them on the air. So we got some good emails this week. So I want to share these with you guys. This one says, "Hey, John, I love the year-end review shows. Always filled with so many good old school bodybuilding stories. When you mentioned the Iron Claw at the beginning of part two, I started thinking about when Vince McMahon from the WWE decided to start his own bodybuilding league, the World Bodybuilding Federation, aka WBF. That would make for an interesting history podcast about how it all came about, went down, and ended after only 1 year. I know it's 90s era, but it's still very early in the decade. It would be a fun topic. Well, keep up the good podcasting and video work as always, and I look forward to whatever you put together next. Sincerely, Spencer Scott Holmes, the Pizza Boy Comics Guy. All right. Yeah, that would be a good topic. I'd have to do a little research. Obviously, I remember when it happened, but I would probably want to go back and read some of those magazines. Maybe we can get a good guest on that knows a little bit more about it. But yeah, that would be a good topic because, like you said, that was definitely a part of bodybuilding history. And it was kind of wild how it really changed the game as far as Joe Weider having to pay more money. And Jerry's talked about that several times on the podcast, how that was the only time when Joe started paying everybody more money because he had competition now. And they took a lot of good bodybuilders from the IFBB over to the WBF. I think there was 13 of them. But yeah, we should talk about that. And then the whole thing with the drug testing, that was a mess. And just the way they put those shows together was totally unique, but it did not work and it didn't last. It only lasted like 2 years. This one says, hey, John, from the land of the greatest and most controversial Olympia of them all, Australia. First and foremost, I want to compliment you on the podcast and all the other work you do to promote the silver and golden eras of bodybuilding. I greatly appreciate it. Keep up the great work. With that said, I need and will become a Patreon donor to show my support. All right. Thank you. I was born about a decade too late, so I missed the fantastic time in Australian bodybuilding where the greats of the 70s and 80s would visit Australia for promotions, seminars, and competitions. I was a bit too young to attend the 1980 Olympia and the 79 Universe. I know many that did, and I'm very envious. I started training in about 1988, and I have not stopped. I'm still going strong in my mid-50s. It's a bit of a family affair as my daughter, who is in her early 20s, loves training as well. She's also very keen on bodybuilding history. As a result of not being present during those great years, I rely heavily on my vast vintage bodybuilding magazine collection, your podcast, the magnificent video archives of Wayne Galash, of which I've just recently commenced purchasing, and the Muscle Memory website. The combination of the four of these gets me as close as I will ever get to actually being there. My magazine collection spans 1935 to 1985. Wow. And I have about 1,000 magazines in total. It continues to grow. I assume you have a collection of similar size. I look forward to your podcast, whether it be a magazine reading, an interview of a past champion, or your reviews with Jerry Branham. These I especially look forward to. You and Jerry should do these reviews more often. Actually, your work has inspired me to do a bit to keep the best years of bodybuilding alive. I started a website about a year or so ago in which I load key articles from my magazine collection. The website is dedicated to preserving and promoting the history of bodybuilding through the pages of vintage bodybuilding magazines. It has proved to be a key educational and research tool for those looking to expand their knowledge of the silver and golden eras of the sport. To date, I think I have just under 100 magazines loaded with key articles. I also have taken the time to ensure the search engines within the site make it easy for the visitor to locate what they're looking for. I have had good feedback. I hope you get some time to check it out. It might be something that you might find handy. The website is vintagebodybuildingmags.com. I loved your recent bodybuilding podcast in which you read articles from the 1980 and 81 Olympias. A particular note is the article from the December 1980 edition of Muscle Digest. I don't have a copy of this particular edition of this magazine. The article was a gem, so I was hoping, if possible, you could email me a scan of the article for my website. FYI, Peter McCarthy was the Australian judge that was replaced by Brandon Ryan for being late to the judges meeting at the 1980 Olympia. Peter was a great of Australian bodybuilding, and he may not have had the greatest relationship with promoter Paul Graham. Had Peter kept his place, Chris Dickerson would have, if not one, gotten a lot closer to taking the crown. Finally, I have two names of potential guests, Shelley Gruwall and Rory Liedelmeyer. Keep up the great work and take care. Michael Ekonomides. All right, Michael, great job with the website. That's awesome. VintageBodybuildingMags.com. So you guys will have to check that out. I'm going to check that out myself. And I will definitely send you that article from Muscle Digest. Speaking of that article, I just put that podcast up on video. So I'm basically just reading those articles and I put it all up on video with pictures and stuff. So guys, check that out if you want. It's on my YouTube channel. I just put it up today. So that was an interesting, that article he talks about was one of the greatest articles I think I read about the 1980 Olympia, because the author of that article, John Meade, went around and got interviews at the contest with all the people that were there. Joe Gold, Dan Howard, Bill Pearl, Franco, and then he talked to a lot of the key competitors. Chris Dickerson, Mike Menser, Boyer Coe, Frank Zane, and Arnold. So really, really great, great article. So you guys have to check that out. And I will try to get Shelly. I don't know where I could get a hold of her, but Rory is still active on social media. I've hit him up several times. He never responds. No surprise, right? But I'll try him again. This one says, hi, John. I wanted to get in touch and say how much I've enjoyed the latest Years in Review shows. Listening to you and Jerry is always a pleasure. He is the perfect guest. And together, the stories and memories of the golden era are brought to life with every episode. The 80s was my decade, so I look forward to part two. Thanks to both of you. All right, Mike, part two is coming up. And this one says, hi, John. I'm enjoying your show as always. Keep up the good work. A few months ago, Joe Rourke gave me ironhistory.com to take over and keep running. Joe is still on it, but I run it now so I can keep the 20 plus years of archives available for years to come. If you ever wanted to sign up, I think you would find a wealth of information. I just stumbled across this article about Ferrigno talking about his Masters Olympia loss. I loaded it to ironhistory.com. But I also thought it would be a good one for you to share on your shows where you read articles. Or at the very least, I think you would enjoy it yourself. Cheers, Jarrett Hulse. And Jarrett is also a Patreon donor. All right, Jarrett. Well, good for you taking over Joe's website. Joe, of course, is a great historian of the sport. He used to always write articles for Flex Magazine about the history of bodybuilding. So ironhistory.com, I'll have to check out Joe's site. And thank you for sending me that article. I'll definitely read it. It looks really interesting about Ferrigno taking second place to Robbie at that Masters Olympia back in 94. All right, we got a lot of stuff going on the internet. Ironhistory.com and VintageBodybuildingMags.com. You guys are keeping the history alive. I love it. That's awesome. All right, great emails this week. Like I said, if you guys have any emails for me, I'm glad everybody's enjoying these years in review shows that me and Jerry do. I love doing them too, and I know Jerry does too, so I'm glad you guys are enjoying them. If you have any emails for me, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will read your email on the air. All right, well, that's all I got for opening. So here is our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1983, part two, and we're going to discuss all the big pro shows from that year. Here we go. So before we talk about the pros, I want to talk about the Mr. Universe that year, which was, they called it the World Amateur Championships. It was held in, was it Singapore?
Oh, are you thinking about the IFBB one?
Yeah.
And that, we're talking 83, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was Singapore.
Yeah.
And Bob Paris won the heavyweight class, and he beat Barry DeMay.
Barry DeMay, yeah.
And it was very close, because I think Barry was more ripped than Bob, but Bob just had that beautiful shape. Yeah. And I guess Bob was in good enough shape to beat Barry, but that was very, very close. And Barry was only 21 years old that year.
Wow. That was around the time that Barry, maybe a year later, Barry beat another up-and-coming unknown bodybuilder in something called the World Games.
That was in 85, 2 years later, yeah.
And the guy he beat was Dorian Yates.
Right. Dorian got like sixth or eighth or something, right?
Yeah, seventh, I think. It's an unknown guy who showed up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And that, believe it or not, they taught, he had just won a novice show, Dorian.
Right, right.
And they told him to compete in that world.
Yeah, game. I remember that. Yeah, the head of the IFBB in England told him.
That was kind of an upper echelon contest to go from a novice
to a world games, right.
That was a pretty big jump, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Dorian said himself in interviews, he says, getting seventh place after just winning a novice show, to me, was pretty good.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
I have to agree with him, you know?
Yeah. Well, Barry, the year before, had won the Mr. Europe, Mr. Europe or the European Championships, whatever they called it. And he was only 20 to win a contest of that caliber. I think he was the guy who owns the record of that is Arnold, because Arnold won Mr. Europe at 19.
Right.
So Barry won it at 20. And then this was his first Mr. Universe. And I think he had probably one of the favorites to win. And he looked fantastic. And Bob Paris narrowly beat him. And then the next year, Barry lost again to Mike Christian. So that was two tough losses in a row to the Americans, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Ralph Mueller was third. I think that was Ralph's first big contest.
With seven, Ralph, yeah. Barry, I guess you probably know, is still in great shape.
He is. He's amazing.
In his, what, mid-60s, maybe, or early
60s? He's 61. He'll be 62.
Yeah, and he sometimes puts bodybuilding shots of him.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
He's still in great shape.
Barry. Yeah.
Very nice guy. Did you ever
know? He's sized and he's ripped.
Did you ever interview him or anything? Did you ever get a chance?
Yeah, I did. A couple of years ago, I was in Vegas, and he happened to be in Vegas for the Olympia.
Okay.
And we actually did the interview in a hotel room. So I did it in person instead of doing it over Zoom. So that was really cool. We talked about his whole career, yeah.
I told you the peanut butter study about Barry, right? You remember that?
No.
Did he tell you about that? Oh, okay.
No.
We were all sitting around a hotel room, a block away from Muscle Beach. Can't remember the name. It's now called the Hotel Irwin, but it had a different name back then.
Oh, the Pacific, Marina Pacific?
Marina Pacific it was called.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were sitting around in a hotel. It was me, Barry DeMay, Joe Bucci, and maybe two or three other guys. And there was a jar of peanut butter, on the counter. And Joe Bucci saw me eyeing the peanut butter. He says, well, Jerry, do you like peanut butter? I said, oh, my God, I love peanut butter. Are you kidding? So he says, go ahead, help yourself. So as we're talking, I take the jar of peanut butter, and I eat the entire jar of peanut butter.
Oh, my God.
Right? As we're talking, I glance over at Barry DeMay, and he has his jaws hanging just, he's like in shock. And he says to me, I've never seen anybody eat an entire jar of peanut butter.
You Americans are crazy.
Yeah. So a couple of months later, I had a little story I ran with my girlfriend. I asked him for a picture to put up on the wall there, of this Barry. And he signs it, to Jerry, the peanut butter king. Yeah. Yeah, that's my peanut butter story. But. Very, great physique, though. Jeez.
Yeah, and great, nice guy, too.
Very nice guy, yeah.
So the light heavyweight class, Chuck Williams wins that. So the United States wins two classes there. And then Ijo Ryman from Finland was in second, and Ian Dow from the United Kingdom was in third. Right. And then the middleweights, Charles Glass won. So three out of the four classes were won by Americans. So Americans had a good year that year.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah.
Erwin Note was in second, or Note, I don't know how you say it. He was from Belgium. And Erwin Noller from West Germany was in third.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. Vaguely. Yeah.
I remember Erwin trained with Samir that year for the Olympia because Samir was, the Olympia was held in Munich. So Samir went over there, I think 3 weeks before the contest because he wanted to get acclimated to the new climate and stuff. And, because Samir always had problems with getting stressed out. So he didn't want to just fly over there. He wanted to go there weeks ahead. So he was training with Erwin Noller at the gym out in Germany. So that's why I always remember Erwin Noller's name.
Yeah.
So the lightweight class, Appy Steenbeck, remember him from the Netherlands? Kind of a taller, thinner guy, but he was a lightweight.
I do remember him. Yeah.
And Jesse Lujan only got third that year.
Yeah.
He never turned pro, Jesse.
That's the guy who was a doctor, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then let's see. So I mentioned Rich Gaspari won the junior nationals that year, and Ernie Santiago won the USA, and John Kemper won the junior USA.
John Kemper.
Those were the four national level shows held by the MPC.
John ran one of the most famous gyms in New Jersey, Diamond Gym.
Yeah.
That was Bill Grant's training headquarters for many years.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because Bill was from New Jersey.
Right, and John Kemper went on to be an IFBB official.
Judge. Yeah, yeah.
Well, nice guy, very nice guy.
He passed away a long time ago, too, right? He's been dead quite a long time.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was involved. I got some old muscle mags from the first ones, and they had pictures of him in there. So that was in the mid-70s, so he's been around a long time.
Yeah, he had blonde hair,
Yeah, good physique.
Yeah.
All right, Jared, well, let's move over to the pro competitions that year in 1983. There was a lot of them. Why don't we start at the beginning of the year? So we'll start with that World Professional Championships. They didn't have the Arnold Classic yet. They didn't start holding that yet. So They had a contest that was usually held at the beginning of the year called the World Professional Championships. I remember Boyer Co. won it, I think, in 81. So this was 83, of course, and Mohamed Makawe was the winner. And I'll never forget this show because it was kind of a cool show. They held it at Atlantic City, and I think it was at the Playboy Hotel because they had the girls dressed up with the Playboy outfits with the bunnies and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember they gave him – there was a pitcher in flex, and they were all, like, surrounding Mohamed after he won, you know, and he's, like, smiling, you know?
Yeah.
And Arnold did the commentary. I think it was on CBS television. So Arnold was interviewing him, and it was a really good contest. And like I said, it got great coverage. And it was Lee Haney's first pro show because he had just gotten his pro card the year before because he won the Nationals and the Mr. Universe. So this was his pro debut. And second place went to DeFerro, Greg DeFerro, who was in really good shape.
Also from New Jersey, yeah.
Yeah.
They used to call him Rocky.
Yeah, because he looked like Sylvester Stallone, yeah.
I got to know Greg pretty well. Very nice guy. I trained arms with him a couple of times. Very, very intense trainer, by the way.
Yeah.
I actually did a couple of workouts with him, trained very hard. Very hard, you know. Nice guy.
Yeah, he just didn't have the aesthetic shape, right? I mean, he had the muscle, but he had the conditioning. He just didn't have the aesthetic shape.
He didn't have the aesthetic shape. He had really big arms and stuff like that, you know, but he didn't have the aesthetics of the other guys.
Yeah.
He tried to make a comeback years later in the, what is it called? The senior Mr. Olympia. What was it called?
Oh, the Masters.
Masters Mr. Olympia. It bombed out.
Yeah, I heard he looked pretty bad, right?
He was in terrible shape. And I didn't say anything. I mean, him, Bill Grant and I went to the restaurant in the hotel. We were all talking. I didn't mention that he was in bad shape. I didn't want to make him feel bad, but he started telling us about all the terrible things that had happened to him in the last year. His wife left him. He lost his home. I mean, he was very, he was very depressed. I mean, you know, Grant and I were just listening. I'm thinking, and he walked away and I said to Grant, gee, I really feel bad for Greg, man. I mean, it's horrible what he went through. I'm surprised he entered this contest.
And what did he pass away from, Derek?
I'm not sure. It might have been a cardiovascular of some kind.
Okay.
But I mean, he was so stressed that when I heard he died, I was only mildly surprised because the guy, he just looked like, the guy looked like, sounded like he wanted to kill himself, to tell you the
truth. Did he die pretty soon after that?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was about a year or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad.
Well, I remember, like, when he started competing in the late 70s, I saw him win the Mr. International once at in Columbus.
Yeah.
And he's so thick, like, way thicker than most competitors. I mean, even as an amateur, he was thick. He had such size and thickness more than the pros did, more than most pros did, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of it, you know, of course, there was genetics involved and, you know, probably some drug use. But this man really trained. If I didn't train with him, I wouldn't know, but he trained hard.
Wow.
I mean, he was going to failure and everything. I remember doing curls with him. I mean, he would curl in until he couldn't hold the weight and, you know, drop the bar down on the floor. He couldn't even. He tricep push down all the way, very hard.
Yeah.
Much, much harder than most bodybuilders train.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think this was one of his best years because he got second at this show and he beat Haney and he beat Robbie. And Scott Wilson.
Yeah.
And then at the Night of the Champions, he got second again, but Haney beat him at that. We'll talk about that in a second.
Right.
So he had a really good year. And he didn't do the Olympia that year. I don't know why. But he didn't go to Munich and compete.
Right.
But there was a little bit of controversy that McAway got first because he was in outstanding shape, you remember, the year before when in London when Dickerson won the Olympia. McAway only got seventh that year, but that was like the first time that the ripped McAway came out. You know, he was never that ripped before, unless you go back way back to 76 when he won that universe. But this time he was really ripped. And I think he kind of took the judges by surprise at that Olympia because they only placed him seventh when a lot of people felt he could have won or placed higher.
Yeah.
And then he must have been in that kind of shape because right after that, there was a couple of Grand Prix shows and he won them both.
Right.
So then he goes to this show. This is now the next year in February. He goes to the World Pro Championships and he wins again. But I don't think he was quite as ripped.
Yeah.
So I think there was some discussion about maybe he shouldn't have won. But he did have really good, you know, aesthetics and shape. And he was close to being in ripped shape. So he did win the contest. I think he was a deserving winner. I saw the contest. I thought he deserved it.
And he beat Lee Haney at that show, right?
Yeah, he beat Lee Haney and beat DeFerro and Robbie.
I wonder if I didn't see that contest, but I'm wondering if Makawi's showmanship
had
to do with it. Because if you recall, Lee Labrada, the way he posed later on, reminded me a lot of Makawi.
Yeah, he did.
He used to do almost a balletic type of posing routine, very flowing. Yep. And as a matter of fact, he trained for a while. I don't know whether it was for that show or another show. He came out and trained at Vince's gym with Vince Garanda.
It was for that show because Vince was at the show.
Oh, okay. All right. Then it was that show.
I read a report. They said Vince was in the audience doing the poses.
Right.
When Muhammad was up there, he was like, yeah, right. Like this, Muhammad.
But in later years, I guess Vince kind of would make statements that he trained Makawi. You know, he helped Makawi get in shape and this and that. For some reason, which I can't explain, Makawi took exception to that and said that Vince never trained him. Hmm. He trained himself, but Vince did give him posing tips.
Oh, okay.
I don't understand why Makawi, but I met Makawi, believe it or not, at a memorial for Vince that was held in that same hotel in Venice.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, we sat next to each other, and I spoke to him. He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Very, very nice guy to talk to. And this statement came after that, or else I would have asked him about that.
Yeah.
How come, Vince was saying that he trained you and you saying he didn't? You know, I at the time I didn't know that. So.
I remember seeing pictures of him training at Vince's gym, and Vince was training him.
He looked like it, but he denies it. He said that he trained himself.
Hmm.
Vince helped him a lot with the posing.
Brian Moss told me there was a guy in Canada that he was training there for a while because he was living in Canada.
Yeah, I heard that.
I think his name was Ken Wheeler, kind of like Flex Wheeler, but it wasn't Flex Wheeler. His name was Ken Wheeler, too.
Did he own a gym?
Yeah, he owned a couple of gyms, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember his name in association with a gym for some reason.
Yeah, in Canada.
Which is strange because that's Flex Wheeler's real name.
Real name, I know, yeah.
Yeah.
And he also trained Gladys Portuguese 1 year. She came out there and he like trained her for 3 months. He put her on a real strict diet. And she lived like a monk in a hotel room. She didn't do anything.
Wow.
She got in amazing shape. Like she, you know, because Gladys was always like really pretty, but she didn't really have much muscle. And she put on some muscle for the show.
Yeah. Later on, she went and married Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Children with him.
She was with Brian at the time, Brian Moss.
That's right. Brian. That's true. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that Night of the Champions since we just brought that up.
Yeah.
This was Lee Haney's second professional show, and he won it. So what a career Lee Haney had. I mean, he goes in, he wins the Nationals at like 22 years old. He wins the Universe. Then he goes in as a pro show. His very first pro show, he gets third. Second pro show, he wins it. So he beat Greg DeFerro. He beat Albert Beckles. He beat Johnny Fuller. And he beat John Torelli. So pretty good lineup. Well, not as good as that other show, but a good win for Lee Haney.
John Torelli was in great shape at that contest.
Yeah, he was. He really was.
Was Bill Grant in that particular Night of the Champions? I don't remember.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because there was another Night of the Champions where they both competed. There's a backstage photo they're taking in one of the dressing rooms.
Bill Grant, really?
John Torelli, they're all kind of pumping up. Yeah.
Okay.
John used to get in really great shape, John Torelli.
You know, you just mentioned about how McAway probably won that pro world because of his posing.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because I read an article about this Night of the Champions. They did judge every round, and they did judge the posing round.
Okay.
And they said when Lee Haney first started as a pro, his first year as a pro, they said his presentation wasn't that good. He had the physique, but he wasn't as good of a poser. So it was interesting. They had the scores all broken down, you know, the first round where they relaxed, the second round where they do the compulsories, and then the third round where they posed, and they judged, they scored every round, and then they added up the three scores. It was interesting. Haney was like third and fourth in the fourth round, in the third round, in the posing round. And DeFerro was like pretty much all ones.
Wow.
The champions. Yeah.
DeFerro was ahead of league. Jeez, that's
interesting. And so I think Lee beat him by one or two points. It was really close.
Oh, I didn't. Well, that's interesting.
So I had a discussion with Steve Weinberger, the judge, and I had him on my show, and I was asking him about, do you think the posing should be judged? And he said he didn't think so. He said it should be physique. It shouldn't be about the posing. And I brought up this contest, and he said, well, that proves my point. He said Lee Haney had a much better physique than Greg DeFerro. He shouldn't have lost that contest because he wasn't as good of a poser. So
that's a kind of a debatable issue, but it's almost, when you think about it, it's almost like when the AAU used to do the interviews.
Yeah, right.
Where your personality played a role.
Yeah.
When the AAU America, if they didn't like your answers, if you didn't like Harold Poole because of his stuttering, he failed the interview test right away.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a debatable issue because bodybuilding is, there's no escaping the fact that it's a visual sport.
And the posing is important.
And if it's visual, then posing should play a role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In other words, my feeling, if you ask me about it, I'd say the posing would come into play if it's close between two competitors.
Yeah.
Where the physiques are very close, you know what I mean? Kind of like the way Bob and Rory were, but one guy is a stiff, terrible poser who doesn't present himself good. The other guy is a fantastic poser who shows all of his physique to the best. I'd have to give it to the better poser.
Me too.
But as a part of presentation.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I mean, you can't escape that. I mean, I told you the famous story about 1990, Mr. Olympia, when after the prejudging, Lee Labrada was in first place.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Lee Haney. Then in the night show, Lee Haney wins. And I asked Wayne DeMille afterwards, I said, how come Lee Labrada had won the prejudging and Lee Haney, of course, Lee Haney was already coming, Mr. Had already won 7 Mr. Olympia. That makes a big difference, as we both mm-hmm. know. So how did Lee Haney lose to Lee Labrada? I mean, how did Labrada lose to Lee Haney at the night show when he won the prejudging? And Wayne DeMille says, presentation, posing. I'm losing. I don't understand what you're saying here. He says Lee presented himself better than Lee Labrada. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. I'm going to turn off the tape recorder. I said, listen, Wayne, Lee Labrada is probably the best poser in bodybuilding now. I said, you're telling me that you think that Lee Haney, who used to, you know, I said, yet Lee Haney is not the worst poser, but that's not his strong point, posing.
His
strong point, yes. He says, no, you don't understand how it works, Jerry. It's not how smooth the routine is or how balletic it is or something like that. It's the guy who presents himself the best. And Lee Haney won the posing round, which allowed him to win the title because the way he posed presented himself the best. That's how he won the posing.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a kind of circuitous answer. I still don't understand that.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. Lee Haney won that year, you know.
Well, I agree with you. I think it should count. And I think if it is close, I mean, I know like some people will say, oh, well, if a guy's got a good routine, he doesn't have the best physique, that doesn't mean he should win. And I don't, yeah, obviously he shouldn't win. I mean, we're judging the physique first. But like you said, if it's close between two people and one guy puts the effort in and shows he has a better presentation of his physique, he should be rewarded for that.
Yeah. And not only that, but
if the guy who gets second is told by the judges, man, you could have won, but you didn't pose good enough, right, then he'll improve for the next time and he'll be a better poser.
So you have to take into account the audience reaction.
I mean,
let's say that they had no posing thing where everyone came out and just did mandatory poses. Front lat, double on bicep. I mean, come on.
Well, that's really what it is now because they don't judge the posing. So they really are just going, and they don't really even have a relaxed round anymore. So they really are just going on. The whole contest is the mandatory pose.
Which is why one of the reasons why it's so boring these days.
Yeah, yeah.
In some of those more creative routines like Lee Labrada, Macaulay, even Charles Glass, you're bouncing around the stage, that was very entertaining to the audience. Yeah. I mean, you know, so, I mean, I guess the women's show can get away with less posing, especially these, what are they called, the wellness girls?
Yes.
I mean, they come out and they do this weird walk where they put one foot in front of the other, which always kind of.
Well, if you think about it, a lot of the divisions now don't do any posing. Wellness, bikini,
no posing.
Figure, men's physique, they don't do any posing. They just stand there.
No posing. And in fact, I think in the men's physique, muscle poses are discouraged. They tell them they'll take points off.
And they only do front and back. They don't even look at the side.
Yeah, front and back. And the wellness girls, what do? They come out, they stand there in the front with the thing with the hand where they go like this with the hand.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and stick their butts out.
Right.
Which is very entertaining. Don't get me wrong, to the guys in the audience, love that. I'm not going to. But I mean, that's their posing.
Well, that's why I think the shows today are kind of boring.
I think they are too. That's what I said. That's why I'm not a fan.
They've got a DJ playing background music.
Yeah.
And it's just one after another after another. But there's no individuality. No. There's no routine.
There's nothing to really hold your attention other than the size of the guy's muscles. That's it.
Yeah. I went to a show last year. It was in Tampa. It was a pro show. And I was sitting off to the right. And there was some amazing physiques. I think they were doing figure, and they had a master's division. Like, these ladies were over 50. They were unbelievable. And after a while, because there's no routine, there's no posing, it's not to music. Well, they had background music, but it's not to their own individual music. It's not choreographed to music like a posing routine is. You just become numb to it after a while. And I looked over, and everyone's just on their phone. There's no applause. I remember there was one lady that was unbelievable. I'm like, look at this lady. She's 52 or something, and nobody's clapping. Nobody is clapping.
There you go.
She should be bringing the house down, you know.
In the past, she would have.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean.
You remember Joey Folco?
Yeah.
I think I told you the story. But Joey Folco won the 1978 Teenage Mr. USA. He trained in Mihalik's gym. He was a really good teenage bodybuilder, and he got out of it right after that. He's got in his 20s. He opened up a gym, and he didn't have his heart into it. And he went into music. Now he's a musician. So now he's got kids, and his kids play with him in a band, like the Partridge Family. And his daughter is really, really good. She's like a really good singer. She was in one of those TV shows.
Oh, okay.
Like America's Got Talent or something like that. And she wanted to get into bikini. So she was in a bikini contest. So he went with her, and he didn't know how the sport had changed and all these. And he's like, and they brought all the bikini girls out, and they just introduced her. Here's number 143. And she comes out, and he went nuts. He goes, this is crazy. He goes, no, they're not posing. He goes, they don't have their, he goes, the whole thing is you're supposed to have your time under the spotlight. You're supposed to have your time, your moment in the sun, you know, and you have your routine and you have your music, and that's your moment, you know. He goes, these people don't have their moment. They're just like, it's like a cattle call. They're just like, you know, one after another.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, unfortunately, I think that takes a lot away from the popularity of these events.
Yeah. Well, I remember going to shows in the 80s when it was just bodybuilding, and you'd go to like a contest, and there might be like 50 competitors. I mean, and some of them wouldn't have good routines, and some of them weren't as good as other people. But every so often, you'd get somebody up there like a Roy Liedlmeyer who'd come out with a great routine, and the place would go nuts, you know? And when you don't have the posing and you don't have the individual music and you can't choreograph a routine to it, it's all taken away, you know?
That's right. It takes a lot away from it.
Yeah.
I think it's a mistake, but, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, it's the way it is now.
I mean, I don't think that the people that run bodybuilding, you know, are the sharpest tacks in the closet. Let me put it that way. I mean, I'm not impressed by the way they run, but I don't want to get into personal attacks. I'm just not very impressed with these people that are the organizers today.
Okay, so Haney wins that contest. That's the night of the champions. And there was a couple other shows. Scott Wilson finally won a pro show. It was called the Portland Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So he had a great physique for many, many years, so that was good to see him finally win.
Huge deltoids, very big.
Yeah, great physique.
Yeah.
And he had a long career. He goes way back to the 70s, right? You know, competing in the AAU and all the national level shows there.
Yeah.
And Tony Pearson was second to him, and Tony looked really good.
Yeah.
Because Tony was like, remember what happened with Tony? He won the AU America, and then Tom Platz got the decision to go to the universe, so Tony never got a chance to turn pro. Yeah. So then he went over to NABBA and WABA, and then he tried to come back to the IFBB, and he had a hard time. I mean, he had a great physique, but kind of the politics were kind of stacked against him, I think, because he was doing that other organization, you know?
Yeah, it's very unfair.
But he won the Denver Grand Prix that year, so at least he won. He did win a pro show, so that was good to see.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to the Olympia. The Olympia that year was held in Munich, Germany, and it was a great Mr. Olympia. So Chris Dickerson had won the year before. He did not come back. And also Tom Platz did not come back. Tom tore his bicep in 82 and for some reason decided to sit out 83. Wasn't that weird? He got his bicep repaired right after the 82 Olympia. So I would think he would be in shape for 83, but he decided, and he was there and he guest posed, but he didn't compete.
Interesting. I don't know what his reasoning was.
Yeah. I always thought he should have did it the opposite. He should have sat out 82 because he tore his bicep before the Olympia, so he shouldn't have competed. And then he should have gotten it repaired and then trained another year for 83, I would think, you know.
More sense, yeah.
So Samir ends up winning the contest. Samir was fourth the year before. He was in great shape in 82. That was the first time really in his career he was really, really ripped. Yeah. So he came back even a little bit bigger in 83, but he was still ripped. And probably the better Mr. Olympias, don't you think, Jerry, in the history of the sport was Samir?
I think that Samir's physique, Samir's a good friend of mine. I just will point that out, you know, but I think the physique he presented when he won the 83 Mr. Olympia is probably the best. When you take everything into account, symmetry, proportion, posing, everything. That was probably the best Mr. Olympia physique ever.
Mm.
And I'm including even the current guys.
Yeah.
So he literally looked perfect. He had, I mean, Samir, as you pointed out earlier, always had a problem leading up to a contest. I mean, all the contests I was at with Samir, he'd call me in the room like 3 days before. He'd check me out. What do you think? And it looked fantastic. I said, Samir, you look like you did in Munich. You look great, man. And then the night of the show, he would look off.
Yeah.
He always blamed it to stress and aldosterone and this and that and cortisol.
Yeah.
You know, but the point is, at the 83 Olympia, whatever he did, I wasn't in Munich, but he hit the nail on the head, like they say. Everything was perfect. I think he was, what, 186 pounds or something like that?
The year before, he was 186. I think he was like 194 or something in 83. He gained like 7 pounds or something.
Yeah. But the conditioning was, it couldn't have been better.
Yeah.
Everything was crisp. He didn't have a drop of fat. His back was phenomenal.
His rear double biceps was, oh my God.
Still one of the best backs in bodybuilding history.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, so that.
Isn't that amazing? That was 40 years ago and it's still one of the best.
Unbelievable. It's true.
Yeah.
You know, but, he was a clear winner. That I mean, I know Bertil Fein, I know there was a couple other good guys in the show, but
yeah,
you couldn't have beaten Samir that night. He was bodybuilding perfection that night.
Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, it's amazing that he was only under 200 pounds and he looked like that. You know,
when he was training for that show, he used to ask me questions. We used to talk about getting ready for the show. Before he went to Germany.
Yeah.
Sometimes he credits me for helping him win the Olympia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he sometimes does that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so McAway was second. So big improvement from seventh the year before, but I think people now recognize how great. And he had one of the best posing routines, I think, in the history of bodybuilding that year at the Olympia.
No question about it, yeah.
He's supposed to that real classical music.
Yeah, if you have a video that you show, that you know, you'll see.
Yeah.
Flawless posing by Bacow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Lee Haney in his first Olympia was third. Mm-hmm. So Lee obviously showed that he had the potential to win it. I just don't think he was at his best yet. And the story that Lee told me and has told other writers was that his presentation just wasn't ready yet. Like they said at the Night of the Champions where he lost that posing round. And they said the same thing at the Olympia. They said, I saw his posing routine. I thought it was okay. I mean, he was doing lunging poses and stuff, but they just said it wasn't as professional as he needed to be, which shows how highly regarded posing was back then, you know?
I mean, imagine you can lose by posing. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And then you have this guy, what was his name? The judge who told you that posing shouldn't mean anything.
Steve Weinberger, yeah.
Very surprising for coming from Steve, who's been around so long.
Yeah.
Surprising statement from him. Whereas the guy who he worked with, Wayne D'Amelia, he said that Lee Haney won by posing in 1990. You know, I mean,
right.
Contradictory there, you know?
Lee Haney told me that what happened after that contest, because Arnold was at the contest in Munich, Germany, and he said after the contest they had an after party, and Arnold came up to Lee, and he told him, he goes, you got a great physique, but he goes, you need to work on your posing. And he said Arnold said he had a posing coach in L.A., and he gave Lee Haney the number of the posing coach, and Lee went to this posing coach, and she really helped him, and it made a huge improvement, because if you see his routine in 84, when he posed to Excalibur, I mean, he was masterful. So he made a great, great improvement in his posing.
So he took Arnold's advice.
Now, what'd you think of Bertel Fox in that show? Because a lot of people say Bertel should have won, or he should at least take second to Samir.
Bertel was very massive. I just wrote an article where I was talking about, I mentioned body types as an old thing, scientists who used to divide people into ectomorph, which was thin, endomorph, fat, and mesomorph, muscular. And the truth of the matter is, subsequently, other scientists have pointed out that you very rarely get straight. I mean, there's a lot of nearly pure ectomorphs. These are the guys that are very thin, you know, good amount of endomorphs, you know, but mesomorphs, meaning people have look muscular without even training,
are
rare, right? Now, a lot of these, but they do exist, and a lot of them do become bodybuilders. I remember interviewing a lot of female bodybuilders, not bikini, these are the hardcore female, and they told me that one of the reasons they got into bodybuilding, a lot of them said this, was because they were already muscular before they even even before they lifted weights. So my point being is that one of the pure mesomorphs to me in bodybuilding history was Bertel Fox. I mean, this guy was just pure muscle.
Mm-hmm.
He had gigantic arms. I mean, huge chest. And he was pretty strong. I think I told you the story of one time I was coming in. Gold's Gym was on 2nd Street. And, you know, they were preparing to – Weider was going to do a photo session with Bertel. And, you know, Bertel was there. And I walk in and he's doing these curls, you know, with these big giant dumbbells, basically like this, like they look like they weighed nothing. And I knew that that the dumbbells they used for most of the posing photo shoots were fake.
Mm-hmm.
They were big giant dumbbells made out of balsa wood. The dumbbells actually weighed less than a pound, but they looked like they weighed 150 pounds, right? So I figured, I said to the guy at the counter, I said, oh, look at Bertel. I see he's warming up with the fake dumbbells. I guess they're ready to... He says, Jerry, those aren't fake. I said, what do you mean? I mean, they were like, I think they were 85 pounds in each hand, and they were the real dumbbells.
Yeah.
He was going like this. 85 pounds.
Right. Unbelievable.
You know, but the problem with Bertel, again, relates to the posing thing.
Yeah, he wasn't a good poser.
I was told this story, like he had those giant arms, right? He had huge, I mean, he had a great thing where he did a kneeling shot where he showed his tricep. It was immense.
Yeah. Like a kind of a most muscular, right?
Right, exactly. But when he did a double on bicep, you're supposed to kind of go like this to show the bicep. He would go like this.
Yeah.
Hold his elbows all the way in. And Arnold, I didn't know if this, I can't confirm this story is true. Arnold supposedly worked with him because he looked at Bertel and he said, this guy should be winning everything. And he worked with him for like 2 hours to try and help him, you know, teach him how to pose. And Bertel, the next show, went back to his same crappy pose, like holding it. When you go like this, even if you have big arms, your arms are going to be 3 inches smaller.
Yeah.
Anybody. So a lot of what hurt Bertel was his horrible posing. You know, he didn't know how to pose his back. He made himself look smaller than he really was.
Yeah.
Bertel was very thick, very, very massive guy.
Oh, God, his chest and arms, his chest was unbelievable.
Oh, my God, just so thick. I mean, but again, I think his present, you know, here we go again. I think his presentation really hurt him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just never caught on.
Well, speaking of Arnold, he was at that show in Munich. Yeah. And I guess he was cheering loudest for Bertel. He thought Bertel should have won.
Yeah, sort of like that's probably he probably worked with Bertel for the show.
Yeah,
he was posing.
There's a video of Bertel's training, and they have a segment with Arnold talking, and it's at World's Gym, and they're sitting outside, and Arnold is talking about how Bertel's got it all. He should be Mr. Olympia.
Hey, there you go.
Like, just what you said. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Arnold liked Bertel. Well, you know, he was massive.
Yeah.
Kind of like Arnold was when he first got
right,
over.
Right.
It's like, you know, I remember when Frank Zane used to judge occasionally with judging contests, he would pick out the guys who we'd pick to win would be guys who looked like him.
Yeah.
He liked the slim, hard, ripped, defined guys.
Yeah.
Other guys in the show would be much bigger, but Zane would vote for the slimmer guy.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he consciously did that. Because they look like him, I couldn't tell you, but I was told that this is what he would do, you know? So,
well, Zane told me when I interviewed him that he said judges will always pick somebody that they want to look like.
I didn't even know that story.
Yeah, yeah.
Proves my point.
So he was kind of saying you can't take these judges seriously because they're just going to pick somebody who they want to look like, you know?
Yeah, and if Arnold judged, you know he would judge the guys with the big arms and the big pack.
Yeah.
He thinks that this is the way bodybuilder. That's why he liked Bertel.
Yeah.
Again, this is the way a champion bodybuilder should look.
Right, right. Speaking of Zane, he was fourth in the show. This was his last Mr. Olympia. So he obviously won three Olympias from 77 to 79. He took third in 1980 when Arnold won. And then 81, he didn't compete when Franco won. Then he made a comeback in 82. He got second to Chris Dickerson. But I think he was a little bit bigger that year and he wasn't as cut.
Yeah.
And then this year, I think he was kind of showing his age. I think he was 41 years old.
Yeah.
And he had an injury before the contest. I think he was riding his bike, and he fell off the bike, and he really hurt his shoulder. Right. And that messed up his training. He couldn't train that heavy. And, you know, when Frank can't train heavy, I mean, he loses size pretty quickly.
Well, he had another incident. I don't know what was another, maybe a couple of years before. You know the story about when he was sunbathing and the
that was 80. Yeah, that was 1980.
About 80.
Yeah.
Whatever he's lying on folded up on him, it almost cut his penis off or something like that.
And urethra. He cut his urethra.
It was a serious injury. You know.
Yeah.
Frank probably saw the handwriting on the wall. You know. I mean.
Yeah.
Probably saw that bodybuilding. Even though Samir wasn't the biggest guy. I think Frank probably foresaw that, you know, they were heading towards bigger guys.
Well, Lee Haney beat him, so.
Lee Haney beat him, you know, so, you know, he was, you know, Frank, as we've mentioned in the past, was a fantastic bodybuilder, deserved his three Olympia titles.
Yeah, yeah.
Limited, and he couldn't get really big.
Yeah.
So concentrate on refining his physique, coming in sharp and cut and ripped, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
In other words, if in his mind, Frank was not a stupid guy. If he could, if he felt that they were going to give the bigger guys an edge, no matter what kind of shape he's in, why bother competing?
Yeah.
I think it was a wise decision on his part.
Yeah, he said he kind of looked at Bill Pearl's career, and Bill stopped competing at 41, too.
Yeah.
So he thought, well, I'm 41, you know, maybe this is the time to give up.
Yeah, in bodybuilding, at that elite stage of competition, you know, when you're in the upper echelons of body, it is a little bit harder to get in that in the same shape, let's say at 42 or 43,
yeah,
let's say at 30. You can get in great shape, like Zane did get in great shape, but it's very much more difficult to reach that same level of refinement, let's say.
I remember when I saw him in this contest, he kind of was looking his age. He looked older.
Yeah.
He didn't, the muscles weren't popping like they used to, you know.
Right.
It was interesting, too, when I interviewed him. You remember how Frank was always into dreams and symbols and, you know, and he would always have dreams before he won the Olympia, and it would predict his success, you know. And he was a firm believer in affirmation. So he would say something over and over. I heard a story, and I think I confirmed it with him, that the year he won the Olympia, he said, "I am Mr. Olympia." And he said it throughout the year. I think it was like, I don't know, like 5,000 times or something. So he had to say it like so many times a day. But when you say something over and over and over and over again in your conscious mind, it becomes in your unconscious mind too, and you really believe it, and it really comes true, you know?
Well, you know, there's something to that. I mean, they've shown in psychology
study
that there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, but most people are not willing to say something thousands of times.
They
have to be really, really.
Or write down your dreams every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, write down your dreams. And you have to really be focused in a certain way.
Yeah.
People are not capable of doing that. But if you are, it probably will help you achieve whatever goal you're seeking. Because like you say, you subconsciously become totally convinced of it happening.
Yeah.
And come across a reality. Like I tell people the story about Arnold. I think I mentioned this to you. When he first came over to the United States, he had a different personality.
Yeah.
Arnold was actually a little bit shy, if you can say it. Or he was, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, he would take everything, like if somebody laughed in the gym, he thought,
of course, he'd
take it personally. He thought they were laughing at him. But what he did, he did a psychological technique called modeling. That's the word they use, where you act, even though you're not, this isn't your real personality, you act like you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold started coming on cocky and a little bit on the arrogant side, but very self-confident. And within about 2 years, I watched it. I watched it. He became that personality, and he never turned back.
Right.
You would have spoken to Arnold, let's say, the first 2 years, you would have been shocked.
Wow.
Very, very kind of, you know, shy personality.
Yeah.
Almost in tears when Vince called him a fat fuck. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He did that modeling. It really works.
Wow.
So, I mean, like I say, I believe that Frank there's something to that. I mean, but like I say, most people are not capable of that type of focus.
Yeah, well, I always felt like Frank, because he didn't have the size, in order for him to win, everything had to be perfect with him, you know, and I think it all started with his mind, and he would convince himself over and over, like, you know, all throughout the year that he was going to win. And I remember reading his book, and he was talking about when he got ready for the 79 Olympia, he had a house in Palm Springs. So he went out there by himself. I don't think his wife went with him. And he was just completely alone, and he would train out there. He had a gym, and he would lay in the sun and pose and eat his food, and he was so focused, no distractions.
I believe that.
He said by the time he got to the contest in 79, he was already Mr. Olympia. When he got off the plane, he was already Mr. Olympia.
That's Frank. I believe that he would do something like that, yes.
But talking about this show, when I did the interview with Frank, the thing he kept telling himself was, I want to win my fourth Olympia. And guess where he got it? Fourth. So
maybe he should have rephrased that.
Yeah, he should have said some other way. Yeah. So that was a great Olympia, and I always look back at the 83 Olympia, and I think it was one of the last ones. You know how they have now all the divisions. We have the open men bodybuilding where those guys are all freaky, and we were saying, you know, like anybody, even like Samir with his perfect physique, if he would go in the open division today, he wouldn't even make top 10.
As great as he was. He was just simply too small.
Yeah. So in order to reward those physiques, now they develop classic physique. So we've got really two different divisions. You know, you have a classic physique body, and then you have an open men's body.
So you just raised an interesting question, John. If Samir, you know, you don't have this great guy. God, I always forget his name. The guy's won the classic five times now.
Bumstead.
Chris. Great physique. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
No question about it. I don't even argue that. But I wonder, here's a question to you. If Samir was somehow able to get in the same shape that he was in when he won the Munich Mr. Olympia and entered the classic physique against Bumstead, who would win? Who do you think would win?
Oh, I think Samir would probably win.
I think Samir would win.
Yeah. He had that smaller waist, the bigger arms.
Yeah.
The back.
And a better back.
Yeah.
Much better shaped arms.
Yeah.
Samir would actually win that today. He would win that.
If he looked like 83.
Yeah. And he actually had a perfect classic physique body.
Yeah.
Wasn't overly big, but he had all the symmetry and proportion, you know, but like you say, today, no, in the open, he wouldn't do nothing.
But it's interesting, like, if you go back 40 years and you look at the 83 Olympia, they had all these different types of physiques, and the judges had to figure out, you know, what do we reward? Do we reward symmetry, size? They had to look, I mean, you imagine how good these judges had to be to do this? Yeah. You know, I mean, you had to look at all different physique. Like, you're looking at Frank Zane, so he's got the aesthetic physique, but he doesn't have the size of a Bertel Fox. And then you've got Muhammad Mekaweh, who's got great posing. He's really ripped, but he's small. And then you got Lee Haney, who's tall, and he's got a smaller waist and wider shoulder. Wow. I mean, you got all these different factors, and you got this whole hodgepodge of competitors who all have different strengths and weaknesses, and you got to figure out who's first, second, third, fourth. I mean, that's tough, man. The judges, I take my hat off to these judges, and I know they used to put the score sheets in the, and if you look at the score sheets, it's interesting because the scores are pretty all over the place, you know?
Not only that, but you have the I mean, if they were judging by size, strictly by size, then Samir might have gotten fourth or fifth.
Yeah, Bertel would have won.
I mean, even Lee Haney would have beaten because they were bigger than Samir.
Right. Yeah, they would have been first.
The judges were, let's say, wise enough to take into account Samir's overall look. He had the best overall look, and he deserved the title.
Yeah.
But that was a good choice that year.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like those contests, looking back, you know, and looking at all the different types of physiques and how they would judge the relaxed round, and then they would judge the mandatories, and they would judge the posing. And then from all that, they had to figure out. I think this was one of the last Olympias where you did have that wide variety of physiques, you know.
You know what I sometimes think about? I sometimes think that imagine if a guy like Bertel Fox or Sergio Oliva had been, you know, were able, let's say they were younger, competing today, and they used the same drug regimes. Remember, these guys used almost,
yeah.
I mean, look how big they were without drugs.
Especially Sergio.
Yeah, if they duplicated the drug regimes that these guys are using, what would have happened? My personal opinion, Sergio and Bertel would have destroyed these guys.
Yeah.
Even Arnold would have destroyed these guys.
Yeah. Because
what they used back then was like baby food compared to three Dianabol and a Deca or a testosterone. Come on.
It's amazing how big Sergio was on that.
Yeah, I mean, just look, I mean, you know, the thought of him on a huge steroid program is mind-boggling. Would it scare him?
It is scary.
He looked like some sort of cartoon figure.
A tiny waist, man.
Yeah, the waist would have said he would have been even bigger. I mean, it would have been, he would have just destroyed these guys.
I know. Crazy. Well, they had three Grand Prix shows after this Olympia. Like, I think it was the following week. It was right after. And I think they were all, I think they were held like all in 1 week. Oh. So the first one was in Switzerland, and Samir didn't do them. Samir and Frank Zane didn't do them. Yeah. But I think they went to them. I think the first one in Switzerland, they actually went to it and they guest posed. But they didn't. But I don't blame Samir. I wouldn't do it either if I was Mr. Olympia, you know. So Mekaweh took first. Right. And Bertel Fox took second, and Lee Haney took third. That was pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. But that was the first one. Yeah. And then the next one was in Sweden. And Lee Haney got harder. In just a couple of days, he was staying on his diet. He was getting harder. So Mekaweh won the second one as well in Sweden. Lee Haney got second this time. Joseph Wilkosch moved up to third, and Bertel dropped down to fourth. So Bertel must have been getting smoother, and Lee was getting harder.
Right. That's
and I think Mekaweh got harder and harder, too, because by the every show you could see his definition was improving.
Right.
And then the last one, I think, was held by Oscar State. It was in England, and Mekaweh won that one. Lee Haney was second again. Joseph Wilkosch was third again, and Bertel didn't even compete. He dropped out by England, which is weird because he's from England. Right.
Well, he probably wasn't very happy with his placing, maybe.
Yeah.
Bertel was a kind of emotional guy, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I remember once one of the circuits in Europe, we all went to a restaurant, me, Bill Graham, a bunch of the guy, Bertel was competing. And, you know, for some reason, the restaurant was taking a long time to bring the food out. And Bertel, you know, he had a real big temper tantrum. I mean, I thought he was going to break some tables. I mean, he was ready to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to Grant, I said, geez, this guy's got some bad temper, man. I mean, Mike Christian was there. None of us we were all hungry. I mean, but none of us were ready to, you know, Bertha was, where's my food? He's banging the table and this.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, I'm thinking, so when that incident happened later on, where he shot his girlfriend and her mother, I wasn't that surprised because I saw his temper. You know, I mean, he had a very bad, what they call a volcanic temper.
Yeah, yeah.
A good mood 1 second, and the next minute, like, you know, furious.
Yeah. Yeah, I did an interview with, I'm forgetting his name right now, but he's a publisher. He used to work for a magazine, and he was training with Bertel.
Yeah.
At the time, in 83, right, when he was getting ready for this Olympia. And him and this other guy were training, and they were kind of, they were natural. They weren't even on drugs. They were kind of normal guys. They worked out, but they had to lift the weights up for Bertel. They were getting a great workout lifting all these dumbbells up for him, you know. So anyways, Bertel calls him up one day, and he's crying. And he's like, my wife is going to leave me.
Oh, man.
And he goes, can you call her and tell her, you know, just explain to her that I'm so moody on this diet. I'm going crazy, and, you know, things will be better once the contest is over. So he goes, yeah, okay, Bertel, I'll call. So he calls up the wife and he tells him, you know, hey, listen, Kim, you know, he's just going through a lot right now. He's dieting and, you know, he'll be better after the contest is over. You just got to, you know, wait a couple more weeks and, you know, see it through, you know. She goes, he stabbed me in the cheek with a fork.
Oh, wow.
And he goes, what?
Jeez.
He goes, forget I said anything. You need to leave.
Well, for a while, Bertha was in California. She was she had a job up at the Weider office.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And she used to come up every so often, and she'd have, like, marks on her face.
Wow.
You know, black eye, and you know, and people would say, not me, but people would say to her, hey, what happened to you? You know, what's going on? And she'd say stuff like, oh, I walked into a door. And, you know, the truth of the matter is we found out later.
Yeah.
Was having his temper tantrum, so it was punch her in the. Thank God. I mean, if Bertha would have hit her full force, would have decapitated.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure he was hitting her open hand, but still.
Yeah.
Just slap his wife like that is just. That's abusive. They're wrong. That's wrong, you know.
I was in Chicago once at a contest when I was a teenager, and Sergio used to come to the contest, you know, and he was at a contest and he had a table. And him and his wife were there, and he was selling posters and pictures. And I remember she had a black eye.
Yeah.
I never, I'm 17 years old. I didn't put the two together. I never thought he did that, you know. And then a couple of years later, I find out he gets shot by her because he was beating her, you know.
Hey, shot her. He was also very abusive.
Yeah.
That's the mother of Sergio Oliva Jr.
Sergio Oliva Jr., yeah, right.
I think that affected Sergio Jr., I mean, because when I first met him, you know, we were talking about his father. And, you know, I'm not saying that he hated his father, but the affection was not as what I expected it would be.
Yeah.
He told me, I said, hey, your dad must have been very supportive of you. He must have been very proud when you got into bodybuilding. He says, no. He says he didn't support me at all. He told me I shouldn't do it. He never helped me with anything.
Right.
And he had to
sneak out to the gyms and find a gym to train at. Yeah.
So I told him the story, you know, the story I've told you several times about how Sergio cursed me out a couple of times when I met him.
Yeah.
He says, so Sergio Jr. says, yeah, he could be like that.
Yeah.
He's very nasty, he goes.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, you know, I mean, that's them.
Well, that contest, that last Grand Prix on that tour, the one thing I remember about that contest was when Lee Haney lost. That was the one where he picked up Muhammad Bukali. Remember that famous picture?
Yeah.
And I thought that really showed the character of Lee Haney, because they said from the contest reports I read, they said Lee was getting better every contest. There was three of them. Yeah. And every one he was getting harder and harder. And he was so big and he was so tall with that width and the structure. They said by the last one in England, he really should have won. You know, a lot of people felt he could have won. Although Muhammad was ripped, though, too.
Yeah.
And they said the way he handled it was that he didn't get mad. He didn't show his, you know, instead he went the opposite way. And he showed happiness for Muhammad and picked him up. And I remember that picture made it in all the magazines. You know, everybody published that picture.
I remember that picture. And that's Lee Haney's personality. He's not you know, he's not the kind of guy to get mad. You know, that's just, he's a religious guy.
It shows great sportsmanship. And then next year, the Olympia comes down to him and McAway, and he wins.
Yeah, you know, he's always been a great sport. He would never disparage or break a trophy or anything like that. He, you know, that's the way he was.
Yeah. But it's smart. It's smart to do it. Remember Arnold did that too when he lost to Sergio? He kissed him on the cheek.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the next year he wins.
Yeah. It looks better when you do something like that.
Yeah, it shows you're a great sport. And I think it puts you a good view of the judges too. And then they remember that, you know.
Yeah, sure they do. Yeah.
The last show I want to talk about from 83, Jerry, was the they had a contest in December, and they called it the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And the only reason they held this contest was they were filming the movie Pumping Iron 2, The Women. So they had to create a contest. It wasn't the Miss Olympia. They called it, I think, the Caesar's Cup or something like that.
Aisha McLeish and Bev Francis.
Yeah. So they held it in Vegas, and the whole idea was, you know, you got Bev Francis coming in. She's really muscular. And then she's competing against these other female bodybuilders. And this was, you know, we talked about this the last time we talked about how they decided to go, you know, eventually reward more muscular women. And this was like brought up in this movie. Cause I mean, Charles Gaines, the author of Pumping Iron, they had him as a judge, and they had a scene in the movie where Ben Weider was basically saying, we want to go with the feminine look. He goes, we want women to look like women is what he said, you know? And he goes, we want to have a standard of femininity for these women. Cause it was starting to, you know, everybody knew that Bev was coming into the show. And so Charles Gaines said, well, I don't know how you can decide what a woman should look like. You know what I mean? You're going to tell a sprinter she can only sprint so fast, or you're going to tell that she can only throw a javelin so far. You can't do it any farther than that because you're a woman. You know, who are we to stop women from getting as big as possible? So that was the big question in the movie. And then, of course, we know the direction it finally went in. But anyways, talking about the men's contest, they decided to hold a men's contest with it. And I think this was the only time they ever held a contest called the Vegas Grand Prix. So by this time, it was in December, and most of the guys, I remember, were out of shape. So McAway went in it. You know what place McAway got? Eighth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
He won all those pro shows that year and second in the Olympia, and he got eighth.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Probably hadn't trained in a while.
So. Yeah, I'm sure everybody was off their diet, you know. Yeah. But Lee Haney won. He was still in good shape. He stayed on his diet, and he won now his second pro show. And again, that set him up for good momentum going into 84 when he won the Olympia. And John Torelli got second place. So John did really, really good.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it was because John was in shape, Lee was in shape, a lot of the guys were off. Albert Beckles was third, and Greg DeFerro was fourth.
Yeah.
So I thought that was – it didn't get any publicity, really, you know, because it was at the end of the year. But Bill Grant was in that, too.
Okay.
Bill got seven.
I don't even remember the men's show. I remember the women's show because of that movie.
Yeah.
I don't even remember there being a men's show.
You know? Yeah, it got coverage in the magazines, but like I said, it's kind of forgotten about because it was kind of a smaller contest in a way because everybody was out of shape because it was in December. You know, nobody competes in December. So,
yeah.
But great year in bodybuilding. God, there was so much going on with all the national show or the amateur shows, the professional shows. And then you had the NAVA Universe was still going on. The AAU was still pretty big at the time, although you said that was the beginning of the end. It was starting to go down, I remember, after that show. And then the Nationals, of course, was great. And then all those other great pro shows. And one of the best Olympias, too, I think, in the history, you know.
I agree. Yeah, that was a great year for bodybuilding. For sure.
Yeah. All right, Jared. Well, next time, I guess we'll talk about 1993. So we'll start getting into the mass monsters by then, but –
That's a good one because that year I was working for Weider.
Okay.
I did attend all the major shows. So I had literally a first-hand look at what we talk about it at the competitors.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining me, Jerry. I appreciate all your time and your great observations and, you know, all your great stories. And get that picture ready for one of our fans when you find it.
And also, any guys who are listening or watching this, if If you want the best information on nutrition, exercise, science, and everything that I've learned in over 60 years, subscribe to my Applied Metabolics, www.appliedmetabolics.com. It's not expensive at all. I guarantee you'll learn something. So
keep and that. I'll put the link in the description of the podcast so they can click on it and go right there.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Hey, by the way, you're in Tampa, right?
Yes.
How's the weather there before we go? I mean, because it suddenly got cold here in L.A. It's really cold out there.
It was like almost 70 today. It's pretty nice.
We're actually warmer there than it is here.
Yeah.
It felt like 55 out there. I mean, that's
Really? Yeah.
I mean, for somebody from back east, that's warm.
Yeah, right.
But L.A., it's actually cold where you got to put it. I mean, people aren't used to that.
Oh, yeah. If it was 55 here, I'd have the heat on.
It feels surprisingly cold, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I'll speak to you again then.
Okay, Jer. Take care, and thank you again.
Sure. Take care, Jer.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branum for joining us again and discussing the year 1983. So next time when we meet, we are going to go back 30 years and discuss the year 1993. And I know that was a very, very big year in the world of bodybuilding. A lot of amateur shows, a lot of pro shows. So there's a lot to cover. I'm sure that'll be two parts at least. So we will have that next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Also, check out my YouTube page for that new video that's up where we talk about the 1980 and 81 Olympias. And these were reports that were done from Muscle Digest and Muscle Mag International. We had the podcast up a few weeks ago, but now it's up on video. So be sure to check that out as well. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon donor, check out the link below. Also be sure to check out Jerry's newsletter below. The link is there, appliedmetabolics.com. It's only $10 a month. So if you want to learn all about training and nutrition, check out Jerry's website below. We really appreciate the support, and we appreciate Jerry coming on every time. All right, until next week, keep training hard, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.